So I think we need to be careful about saying there was this golden age of purely objective journalism, because there wasn't.
Thanks for joining us this week for Family Policy Matters. Today we'll be discussing a transformation of the news media and why the absence of vibrant news reporting can be a threat to our American way of life. I'm Tracy DeVette Griggs, the Communications Director at NC Family, sitting in this week for John Rustin. Our guest is John J. Miller, Director of the Journalism Program at Hillsdale College. He's also founder and executive director of the Student Free Press Association. He is the author of several books and a contributing writer for some prestigious national publications, including National Review and the Wall Street Journal. John Miller, welcome to Family Policy Matters.
Thank you.
Okay, so as a bit of background, would you very quickly, if that's even possible, explain what has happened to professional journalism in the past decade or two?
Well, that's a big question, obviously, and we've had a revolution in digital media and the rise of the internet. Everybody knows that, and along with it has come the not the collapse of the mainstream media, but the near collapse, and so there are so many different sources of news and information now. And so I like to say that journalism has never been better and it's never been worse. And here's what I mean by that. It's never been better in the sense that Americans and people anywhere have information at their fingertips like never before. If you want to read President Trump's last speech, it's a Google search away. If you want reams and reams of commentary on that speech or news reports about that speech, it's all so easy to find. And when I first got into journalism, it just pales in comparison to what we can do today. All is right at our fingertips. So this is tremendous. It's a great opportunity. It's really wonderful as a journalist to have this kind of information, but more importantly, as citizens, we can all get this kind of information and it helps us think for ourselves. The flip side, of course, is that with so many different sources of information, it becomes harder to know what to trust. And so while there's a lot of really great journalism out there and trusted sources that we can go to, we're seeing the emergence of all kinds of sources of uncertain character, and that creates risks as well.
Great. Talk a little bit more about the fewer number of professional journalists as well and what kind of effect that might have.
So there are fewer professional journalists today than there were a generation ago, and we know that because our organizations that just count numbers. There are fewer jobs in journalism than there used to be, and this is because of the downsizing and closure of many newspapers around the country. There's been an increase in web journalism, as you might expect. Web journalism, which really didn't exist a generation ago. There are tens of thousands of jobs that are in journalism that are entirely web-based. They have not completely replaced the print journalism jobs that have gone away, but the gap is less than what you might think. So there are fewer journalists at work on the one hand. On the other hand, with blogging and Twitter, there's a question about who's really a journalist anymore. And there are a lot of people who can do journalism on nights and weekends. They can moonlight as journalists when they have day jobs. It's created really, a vibrant environment when there's a lot of information out there. It's easier to get information than ever before, but we don't always know when to trust it.
Great. Well, I went last week, I went to Washington, D.C. with a group of students, and one of our speakers was Chuck Lewis, and he was talking about an organization that he has helped begin called the Center for Public Integrity, and the aim is to help recreate in communities all over the country a core of investigative reporters who are doing what investigative reporters are supposed to do. So why is it necessary, do you think, to raise up this independent nonprofit organization to do what used to be the job of local and national journalists?
So that's a great question. This is a subset of modern-day journalism. It's nonprofit journalism. And we're seeing more and more of this. I run an organization myself called the Student Free Press Association, which is it's best known for its higher education website called The College Fix. But these are all species of what you call nonprofit journalism. And I ask my students on the first day of journalism class often, I say, what is the purpose of a newspaper? And I get these earnest answers about to inform the public, to help us, you know, be a self-governing people, this kind of thing. And all that's kind of true. But I say, actually, the number one purpose of a newspaper is to make money. These are businesses. They need advertisements. They need subscribers. And if they don't get them, they're going to go out of business. There's going to be no journalism at all. So this is a commercial enterprise. Now, having said that, there's always been a philanthropic streak in journalism. I've spent much of my professional journalism career at National Review, which was founded by William F. Buckley Jr. in the 1950s. And he always used to say National Review exists to make a point, not a profit. And it measured its success not by the bottom line, but by how influential it was. And so I know National Review would not exist but for the for benefactors. And until very recently, National Review is a for-profit company. It recently went into a 501c3 mode, and it now too can raise money the way so many other groups can. So this is an emerging field in journalism, and it's a healthy development. I think it allows for more opportunities for us to do reporting and to tell stories. But I do think we need to be aware of agendas, because not everybody wants to. Some people do have agendas. Let us just say that, and we need to be wary of them as we turn to these different sources.
Great. So the important part that journalists are to play in America was spelled out in the U.S. Constitution. Can you talk just briefly about that and why, say, the loss of a vibrant news media could be threatening to our way of life?
Well, the Founding Fathers knew how important journalism is. They knew it was an essential part of public deliberation. They knew that if we're going to be a self-governing people with citizens who are informed about what's happening in their town or state or country or world, they're going to need information, that they would get it through newspapers. And this was the reality they dealt with. But newspapers are doing some of the basic functions then that they're performing now. And so when the founders, when they signed the Declaration of Independence, how did people learn about that? Well, they learned about it because it was published in newspapers around the colonies. The Federalist Papers we encounter today in books, and that might trick us into thinking that Alexander Hamilton and James Madison and John Jay, when they wrote the Federalist Papers, got together and divvied up the assignments like these are chapters and they're going to put it together in a book. Well, what they were really doing is they were writing newspaper op-eds. So the founders understood the critical importance of journalism and a free press to the United States, and they enshrined this idea in the First Amendment.
You're listening to Family Policy Matters, a resource from NC Family. To listen to our radio show online and for more resources that will help you be a voice of persuasion in your community, go to our website at ncfamily.org.
I think those of us who are old enough to remember, we have always talked about journalism and journalists as trying at least to be unbiased. So lately, it seems like at least around our office, we talk a lot about that whole concept seems to be just forgotten. So what are the problems when journalists instead take on the role of judge and advocate for one side of an issue or an ideology?
Well, that's a great question, and it's a huge problem today. But I want to begin with a cautionary note, which is let's not remember the good old days when all the journalists were unbiased. I mean, if the ghost of Ronald Reagan could come back and we could ask him, what do you think of all the unbiased journalists at the Washington Post and the New York Times? He would laugh at us, right? He would say those people are all Democrats and they're all liberals and they have it in for me. And so I think we need to be careful about saying there was this golden age of purely objective journalism, because there wasn't. And although some people might claim that to be true, the newsrooms for decades were dominated by liberals, and the shame of it was they refused to admit their own biases. They either didn't want to talk about them or they didn't recognize them. And so we would have things like Walter Cronkite was the most trusted man in America, they used to say about him. But if you read his memoir, he talks about how he would have loved to have been George McGovern's running mate in 1972, which was the most left-wing ticket in American history, maybe before Barack Obama came along. So that tells us something about who was shaping the news in the objective recent past. Or look at Dan Rather, the successor to Walter Cronkite. you know, Dan Rather committed one of the greatest blunders in American journalistic history when on the eve of the 2004 election, he ran with a fake news story about how George Bush allegedly shirked his military duties when he was a young man during the Vietnam era. He was called out on that, and who called him out? The bloggers did. This huge error of the mainstream media was exposed by a bunch of people who, not a bunch, a handful of people who were journalists by avocation, not by profession. And that goes to show you the real power of this journalism now. But there is the problem of when anybody can get a platform on Twitter, that means anybody can have a platform on Twitter, and not everybody's as careful as these folks were. But let's not fall into the trap of thinking that journalism once was great and today has fallen. It's always had problems. The nature and character of the problems shift a bit over time, but the fundamental challenges remain pretty similar.
You mentioned already a couple of times fake news, and of course, I think a year, 2 years ago, a lot of people weren't even aware of such a thing, or maybe weren't quite as aware of it back then as we are now. Why do you think it has been so easy for people to fake news, and why are we also ready to believe whatever we read on the internet, do you think?
Well, a certain amount of it is a lot of people are gullible. A lot of people are willing to be gullible. They're willing to believe a thing they hope is true. And with the rise of social media and the way people pass around articles and recommend them to each other, and it's sometimes difficult for us to assess the reliability of the source. And so if someone shares with you a column by George Will, no matter what you think of George Will, you can probably be sure that any facts in it are going to be accurate. The interpretations are going to be smart, though they might be debatable in certain cases. You're going to get a pretty good piece of opinion journalism that's reliable in some fundamental ways. If another person, though, shares with you an article by someone you've never heard of before from a website that does not sound the least bit familiar, are you going to trust that one as much? And you probably shouldn't. Doesn't mean you shouldn't read it, shouldn't consider it, but you should go to it with a little bit of skepticism. Maybe over time, as you encounter a particular writer more and more, come to like a certain website and recognize its reliability, maybe you can change your mind about that. But we shouldn't believe everything the first time we hear it, because we know there's a lot of untruth out there.
Okay. Well, John, thank you so much. So tell us where our listeners can go to learn more about your work at Hillsdale and also find helpful resources related to good journalism in general.
So I would say to learn about journalism at Hillsdale College, just come to the college's website. Look up the Dow, that's D-O-W, the Dow Journalism Program, and it'll pop right up. I also invite you to go to the College Fix, which is an example of this nonprofit journalism we were talking about. The College Fix is a website of higher education news reported by students. Editors are professionals, but they're working with students. They're trying to train them to tell the untold stories about what's really happening on America's campuses with the crisis of political correctness and the crisis of free speech, the economic crisis of the cost of higher education. These students are tackling these tough subjects and doing some really great original reporting. So go look at go check out the College Fix. Finally, good reliable sources of information. I think the best newspaper in America is the Wall Street Journal. There are lots of good newspapers, and lots of them have their strengths. And I think the best thing to do is find some in your area that cover local and state news well. And you might find out that it's a blogger or it's some website in North Carolina that's doing this kind of work. There's the Carolina Journal in North Carolina. I know it's very good at covering state government. But find this kind of thing in your state and start reading it and start being a loyal reader. And don't expect everything for free, right? If you like something, pay a little bit for it. If you want access to the Wall Street Journal, they're going to charge you. Other places might ask for donations, and think about that, too, if you care about the quality of good journalism.
John Miller, what a pleasure. Thank you so much for being with us on Family Policy Matters.
Thanks for having me on. It was fun.
Yep. And thanks for your work to not only produce good journalism, but also to educate the future generations of American journalists.
You've been listening to Family Policy Matters, a production of NC Family. To listen to our radio show online and for more valuable resources and information about issues important to families in North Carolina, go to our website at ncfamily.org and follow us on Twitter and Facebook.